Great Hera, this is Shannon Farnan, the original voice of Wonder Woman. Welcome to the final episode of For All Mankind, a Super Friends podcast.
In the Great Hall of the Justice League, there are assembled the world's four greatest heroes, created from the cosmic legends of the universe. Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, Aquaman, and those three junior super friends, Wendy, Marvin, and Wonder Dog. Their mission: to fight injustice, to right that which is wrong, and to serve all mankind.
Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of For All Mankind, a Super Friends podcast. For All Mankind was a read-through show that covered DC Comics' classic Super Friends series, which ran for 47 issues from 1976 to 1981. Proud member of the Fine Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, Rob Kelly, and joining me for this very special final episode are my super friends, Chris Franklin. Hi, Chris.
Hello, Rob.
Paul Kinn.
Hello, Rob.
Sean M. Myers.
Open for justice.
And loitering around the Hall of Justice all this time, we finally let him in, Brett Young.
Hi, Rob. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here for the first time, and I'm looking forward to many more opportunities to be on For All Mankind. I'm really looking
forward. don't tell him, everybody. So, yes, of course, there was no other way I was going to end this show other than with, then, you know, the name of the show is Super Friends. And I even when I set out to do this show, started with episode number one, I always knew that there was going to be a couple episodes. I always planned to end it at 50, knowing that there were 47 Super Friends issues. And then, of course, I knew there was the special, which Chris called in like around episode two of the show that we're going to do that. So I always knew I had to come up with something a little different for the final episode. And I just couldn't imagine any other better way to sort of celebrate this show and celebrate the Super Friends series other than to have some of my friends on to talk about the show, the history, some of our favorite issues of the book and things like that. So again, I thank you all for being here, and I will do my best, everybody, to keep this lovable mob under control as we get through the various topics that we're here to discuss. But before we get to all that, we have to thank our sponsor. This episode of For All Mankind is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. InStock Trades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 45% off with free shipping for orders $50 or more. Brett, what do you got?
Okay, I've got Super Friends Saturday Morning Comics Volume 1 hardcover with a cover by Alex Toth, written by E. Nelson Bridwell, of course, art by Ramona Fraiden. This includes a brand new intro by Ramona Fraiden, and collects Super Friends 1 through 26. And the Super Friends features from limited collector's edition C41, which was, I think, the Super Friends Treasury, and C46, which was the Justice League Treasury, which had the, I think, some of Alex Toth's character designs for the show. And then an ultra rare Aqua Tears Meet the Super Friends number one. I know what you're thinking. What the hell is that? I have no idea. I looked it up a little bit. Anyway, 500 over 500 pages. Price was $69.99. Your in-stock trade price, $27.99. You save 67 cents. You save enough. You could buy yourself a Hyundai with that. It's fantastic. But I figure Chris has to know what Aqua Tears Meet the Super Friends is.
Yeah, that's that. It's that insert comic that came with the scuba gear, right, Rob? Mm-hmm. Like a
yep.
scuba mask.
And, yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, there were a bunch
I've
of those kind of.
Them.
Yeah, I have. It's not great. It's a bunch of, and it was branded as superheroes, which is why I've never thought to cover it on the show because it was not. I mean, yeah, it's Super Friends, but it really was sort of its own kind of different thing. But yeah, there were a couple of those, you know, mini comics made just for that occasion where you had various, you know, members of the Super Friends or the Justice League going on some adventure. And so, yeah, I love that they included that in the book. Like, that's such a great pull. Yeah. Because who has that? You know, nobody has that thing. So anyway, that's a great pick, Brett. Thank you very much. I went for one last time, The Art of Ramona Fraiden hardcover, the biography of the great Ramona Fraiden, who, as we all heard, just retired from doing commissions at age 97.
Amazing.
I mean, just God bless her that A, she's still with us at 97, and that the fact that she was drawing commissions up until, what, 96 and a half? I mean, it's just and still doing work. You know, she's like doing, variant covers for DC up until just like a year ago. So just one of the great comic book artists of all time, one of the great careers in all of comic books. So I've recommended this book dozens of times over the course of this series' run. It's 144 pages. The normal price is $29.99. The in-stock trades price is only $20.99. You save 30%. It features some of her work on The Cat, Fantastic Four, DC's Plastic Man, Freedom Fighters, and of course Super Friends. It features a foreword by Walt Simonson. So if you have not listened to my suggestion over the last 4 years to pick up this book, do it here. For these and all the other trade paperback needs, visit instocktrades.com, and we thank them for their support. Okay. One of the most favorite segments, both in and out of the show, was For All Merch Kind, that Chris and I always did, where we talked about a piece of merchandise. We all know, anyone who listens to the Fire and Water Podcast Network for any length of time knows that anytime Chris gets to talk about toys or merchandising, that is podcasting gold. We have been bugging him to do a toy centric show for the longest time. He hasn't done it yet. Maybe you'll get to it at some point, Chris, but we all know that it is just, you know, you love talking about it. We love hearing you and Cindy talk about this stuff. So there was no way that we couldn't end this series with at least a couple of pieces of merch. And luckily we've got the whole gang here to talk about. So there's a couple things, and there's going to be pictures in the gallery post on fireandwaterpodcast.com that we're going to talk about. The first item, by the way, these are all from eBay. Pull these all from eBay auctions. The first one is a vintage rare Justice League chalkboard with Wonder Woman and Superman made in 1978. So Chris, let's start with you. What are your thoughts on this item that I did not know existed until I went looking on eBay for items to end the show with?
Well, I didn't know this existed either. I had a Superman chalkboard. It's on eBay right now if anybody wants to buy it for me. It's like a die cut Superman holding the chalkboard. But this is really cool. I mean, this is really, I love the, it's got the actual Justice League of America comic book logo, the shield. I love the vignette heads. You've got a Neil Adams Superman, a Neil Adams Batman, and a Mike Sikowski Wonder Woman. And then the artwork, you know, the Neil Adams running Superman and the Batman that's punching is Carmine Infantino, although I think somebody redrew his hips because Batman really needs to lay off something. He's got some hips going on. That was used on Ben Cooper boxes, by the way, costumes. And the Wonder Woman, somebody helped me. I pride myself on being able to identify art. I have never been able to figure out who drew this image of Wonder Woman. So if somebody knows, you tell me. So
are you asking about the one where she's walking or the one that's got her head in the circle?
Yes, the head's Mike Sikowski from a Justice League cover.
I think it's Ross Andrew from when he took it over, you know, in the 60s. That's what I think it is, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, it could be that they just redrew maybe the eagle looks like the Super Friends design.
It does, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I've always been perplexed about that. It was used a lot in the 70s, so.
I've definitely seen that one before. Mm-hmm.
Now, Paul, Brett, Sean, would you guys have used this to teach your children or grandchildren about various, you know, letters or numbers or something? You feel like this would be a useful item?
I would say talk to him about the Wonder Woman, but beyond that, I don't know. It's pretty cool. I don't know about $50 for this thing, but especially with all like the scribbly. If you look on the back of it, it's been all like marred up and scribbling and God knows what. But yeah, I mean it's cute. But I'll give you I'll tell this guy I'll give him $20 for it.
I do think it's odd that you talked about the Justice League shield, which looks great, and then there are three heads. But then, so you have Batman in the lower corner, which I disagree with Chris because I don't mind hips. Hips are perfectly fine. But
Batman hips don't lie.
So above Batman is the Batman logo. Above Superman is the Superman logo. And then above Wonder Woman, it's just like a font. Like, it's not her logo. It's just letters.
Ripped right from the Who's Who update.
Wonder Woman came from the later series of... Yeah, exactly. The Who's Who update. As I was going to make the same joke. Yeah, exactly.
By the way, Brett, you said you wouldn't pay more than 20. You will notice that this auction ended with zero bids. The guy was asking $50 for and $35 to ship it. Jeez, so $85 bucks.
It's arriving by invisible jet.
So, yeah. You know, just for that, I'll give him $5 for it.
You're insulted. It is unusual to see a Justice League logo on any merch. That just did not happen. Mm-hmm. Hardly at all, especially in the comic, like ripped right, as Chris pointed out, right from the comic. But you really, there just was not a lot of JLA merchandise ever. So yeah, it's just so strange. Now, again, I'm not going to get on my hobby seahorse, and complain that there's no Aquaman here when there could have been. There's lots of space on this chalkboard, but okay. You know, it's just the way it is. So that is a very unique item. I would have liked this as a kid. I might have, you know, done my drawings on the chalkboard or something. But anyway, cool piece. Okay, so next up is a Super Friends.
Actually, Rob, before you go on.
Oh, yes.
Chris, I think the pose is from, look on Mike's Amazing World, Wonder Woman 103 with art by Ross Andrew. And you're right. I think they modified her boots, certainly. But the pose, that's the cover I was thinking of when I was saying I thought it was Ross Andrew.
Oh,
wow. Awesome. Good pull, Paul. Well done.
Nice. Jeez. Nice.
All right. Yeah, well, Chris, a mystery finally
all
solved
hail,
for you.
All hail to Mike's Amazing World.
Mike's Amazing World. Yeah. Thank you, Mike. Yeah. It continues to be a completely invaluable source. So, all right. Well, now we know. Now we know it's Ross Andrew. So,
yep,
right,
somebody redrew that pose. You're right. Exactly. And I know that cover. And that's it. They just, somebody on DC staff or some other company redrew that pose. And
I think they traced it or something. Yeah. But anyway, yep. That's
it. They made her shorts more booty shorts and gave her boots. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it. This whole episode will have been worth it just so we could solve that mystery. So, okay. Next up is the Super Friends Playlight set, which features two plastic molds of Superman and Batman. And I guess you stick this flashlight in their backs and it projects their emblems. Is that it says light up their emblems, but then it says projects beam. Is that the read I get, guys, that you can project a Superman S and a Batman shield with the flashlight?
I'm just still perplexed why young Walter Matthau is playing Superman. This looks like a job for Superman. You know?
Statistically speaking, it's still the safest way to travel. But am I wrong, guys, that if you stick the flashlight in their backs, it's going to project it backwards, right? Which Superman S?
Which Batman wouldn't matter, but yeah, right. The Superman S, you get a bizarro light.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if it actually projects it. I bet it doesn't. You can't see it like on the wall. I bet that little flashlight is not
right up
nearly,
there in the corner. It says projects beam. And
I think that's
don't
a little
lie.
False advertising there.
I will say I had a Superman flashlight in the late 80s, maybe early 90s with Batmania. There was some cheap rack toy flashlights, and they had a Batman one that shot the bat signal up on your wall. And they made a Superman one, and the S was reversed so that when it projected, it was correct.
Ooh, there
so
you go.
You're going to call it Bizarro if this thing lights up on the wall. So.
All right. It's quality control, at least. It does say Super Friends on it with just a boring typeface. I always wonder if you're not going to bother to use the logo, which is the thing that's visually recognizable from, like, as you say, Chris, this is like a rack toy. Like, why not just put Superman and Batman on there? That's going to gain you more attention than Super Friends just in a plain white type. Yeah. exact. I don't know what the purpose of that is, but I mean, yeah, I mean, they're okay. I mean, he said projects beam. I think that's it's similar to like the Sea Monkeys where they promise an undersea world, and those things are just little krill that just fall to the bottom of the tank when you're trying. They don't have like a little kingdom or anything like that. Now, Brett,
what do you mean? There's no volleyball set when the
now, Brett, would you pay $69.99 for this set?
Absolutely not. I'll give this guy $4 for this.
He's
paying the shipping.
Wow,
Brett's paying shipping. Bid FTA than eBay here, you know. So.
Wow, my goodness. Okay, well, he is saying he was charging free shipping, and apparently this auction is still going. So anybody listening to this, you can make an offer. You don't have to try and get him for $69.99. So you never know.
I'm kind of tempted. I like this. Even though Superman's nose looks a little broad, I actually think this is really cool. It's just off brand enough that it's still a little on brand, but it's back when stuff looked different. You know,
Chris, if you were to buy this at a price that was acceptable, would these little guys stay inside the plastic, or would they be projecting beams around the Franklin?
If you got to buy this thing, you got to shine the light.
It's presents really well the way it is. I'd probably keep it on the card. I honestly probably would. If it's vintage, I tend to do that. Although I did release Mego figures from the package when I, you know, but that was like literally 30 years ago, but you know, before eBay was really prominent. And then, you know, I'm like, oh, I can't find a really good mint Batman loose, so I'm just going to open this one. And then of course, here's eBay, go find a loose Batman. I'm like, oh God, now it's like, I could like, you know, put Danny through one semester of college with that thing. So,
you know. Yeah. It's that would be I would not want to open the package, but as you said, Brett, it would be hard not to want to project them just to see if it worked. You know,
I come from it from the point of view where I have kids that still at ages that still play with toys. So it's not like I can't buy things like this and just leave them hanging around. They're gonna be destroyed anyway. So like I said, I'll give them $6. I'll give them $6 for it.
So, oh, you've gone up $2. Yeah. Okay.
I'll go up to $6 just so I can shine the backwards Superman symbol.
Okay, fair enough. All right. So okay.
I will point out though, Rob, this one and one that's coming up, made by NASTA. NASTA, the sponsor of For All Mankind, because they made the majority of the stuff we talked
they
about.
They did. Yes. The sunglasses, right? They made the sunglasses the we talked about. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were big on the rack toys. And so, yes, our third item is, again, as Chris said, is from NASTA, Super Friends Ice Pops, which features Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman on the cart. Again, no Aquaman, but it's a six pack and it features these little cups with. I guess little heads of our heroes in red, yellow, and blue plastic. And I guess the whole point is that you would dunk, you know, it's like a liquid, like orange juice or something or whatever, grape juice, whatever, into these cups and then freeze them. And it would, I guess, then you would pull it out and it would have the head of the character. Now, the eBay listing mentions Aquaman, but I don't see him anywhere on this packaging. So that this Hawk's House of Toys is a big old liar. Also, they're a little optimistic in that they are asking $149.99. I don't even want to know what Brett would offer for this Super Princess.
It wouldn't be $149. I can tell you that. Just real quick, I will make one. First of all, I think it would be kind of fun to have these popsicles.
Yeah, these are pretty neat. I like these the best. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I will give one note to the seller, though. When you're getting ready to sell these items and photograph them, turn a light on. Because don't make it look like you're holding them captive in your basement. The lighting on these things is terrible. But it would be kind of fun. They're probably completely toxic at this point. I wouldn't eat anything out of them at this point. But they look pretty cool.
It does kind of look like the ice pops are going to break into Fiona Apple's Criminal at any moment. And is that a real vibe to it? Chris,
one of the images has a newspaper with the day's date on it.
Chris, can you source that Wonder Woman?
Yeah, it's Dick Giordano.
Yeah,
is that Dick Giordano?
I would agree with that. Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
The Superman and Batman poses are the stock shots that we've seen on a bunch of things. I like the cups. The cups have the logos plus the little chess symbols, the Wonder Woman's eagle, Superman's S-Shield, Batman's kind of a weird, slightly modified Batman bat. Now, did any of you guys have anything like this? Were there like branded ice pops? I can't. I mean, I made them from ice cube trays and tin foil and toothpicks, thanks to that little ABC timer. Saturday morning cartoon. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tyler.
Time for timer.
Yeah, the hunk of cheese guy. Despite my Richie Rich reputation, I didn't get custom made ice pops. Did you guys have any of you ever have anything like this?
I did. I had Disney ones. Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck.
Okay.
I think we had. Yeah, we had something like that too. I don't think they were branded. They might have just gotten in the grocery store and you would pour in, like you said, grape juice or something in there, and it's a cheap way to make reuse them. But then a lot of times, like, the stick would come apart from the ice bar, and it was just a mess.
Yeah. I do like these though. I like the cups. They remind me of the Pepsi glasses, the way with the logos and the
oh yeah.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's not bad. Again, $149.99 is optimistic for this set. So, okay. This, by the way, the last two were the same seller, the Hawks House of Toys. So he, I'm assuming it's a he. We all know it's a he. pretty ambitious with the selling price. I have to say, I love it. No interest if paid in full in 6 months. I love the idea of buying Superfriends ice pops on the installment plan.
I prefer to think of it as layaway.
He's going to run your credit report. It's like, okay, well, I can do 8%. Okay, all right, that's fine. So, okay, our last piece is a, according to the eBay listing, a vintage Letraset Super Friends 1976 superhero transfers. Can any of you explain to me what the hell this is?
You remember Presto Magics?
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah,
that's what they are. They're Presto Magics.
Yeah,
that's what Letraset is.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
It's the same.
Yeah, Chris,
the same
Chris, you like rub your pencil against them, right? And then they show up on the background, right?
But they don't. They're not reusable like a color forms, right?
No,
right.
No.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, all right. Okay. So it's all right. So it's because they look like, as Paul just mentioned, they look like color forms, but they're not. They're you press them down once and then that's it.
Yeah, Presto Magics. Yeah.
Well, you have to like rub your pencil over, and the thing is, you have to get all of it, because if you don't get all of it, then when you pull it up, like half of Batman's cape will still be on the paper.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Many of my superheroes lost arms, in those Presto Magics, and I always wanted these. They were on the counter, the Presto Magics, not these, which our Presto Magics had much better artwork, I will say.
Oh, yeah. These look like and no offense to our neighbors to the north, but these look like, it's from England, but these look like really bad, like Canadian knockoffs.
Why Canadian? Why are they Canadian? I don't understand.
Because of my lifelong grudge.
My ears just perked up. But I would buy these on the counter of the Presto Magics on the counter of the Ben Franklin's that I bought most of my toys. They had the toy department downstairs, and I would always buy them, and I'd take them home and do it for 5 minutes and go, oh, that's it. And I never learned the lesson, but color forms were so much better. So
I liked Presto Magics. I liked them.
Yeah, I did too. So, okay. This set, as Sean pointed out, the artwork, little on the dodgy side, certainly not drawn by, they're not poses taken from any comic book, or at least they were drawn. Yeah, maybe the poses are lifted, but then they were certainly drawn by somebody that had a few too many whiskey sours at lunch, perhaps. That said, it is an incredibly deep bench of characters that they're pulling from here. You get Batman, you get Batgirl, you get, hey, Dr. Ange, Supergirl, you have Joker, you have Aquaman, yay, finally he shows up, some scuba divers, multiple Batmans, there's a Robin, there's a Penguin, there's Flash, there's a Green Lantern, I mean, and they're all different like settings. Like there's like a one called Hot Air, and there's one called Depth Charge, and then Space Shot, The Pit, and it's all, and it's like the Flash interacting with Robin. Like it's, you know, pretty amazing stuff despite how dodgy it looks. And it, I don't, this feels, I mean, I'm sure it's real. Like, I'm sure it's not a ripoff. I'm sure DC licensed this, but it's the fact that there's no iconography, like the Super Friends is just, again, just like a typeface. It feels like this might have been done on the sly, but it probably wasn't. It just looks kind of back, you know, this was back in an era when DC wasn't, or any of these companies were paying attention to this stuff. They just licensed it and they didn't worry about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it says 1976 DC Comics on it, so it,
okay, well there you go,
it's legit. It's just, it's, yeah, and I know that like Letraset was big in England, and they, like, there's Superman, I think there's Superman 2 Letraset sets that came, like, I think in like cereal boxes or something over there.
Oh, and wow, really, okay,
the artwork on that's pretty cool. I mean, it's got like the movie version of Zod and Ursa Non, and you can recreate all the battle scenes, and it's better than this, but but yeah, so look those up. But yeah, these, despite the dodgy artwork, are fun. I love the train that says woo wee. That's really cool.
Now Brett, there is no way you're going to turn this guy down. He's only asking for $759.24.
There's no chance. There's no chance. I mean, this when I saw it, it's one of those things that just you haven't seen in like 40 years, and it just blows your mind because it takes you back to a time. And then, yeah, then I looked over at the price and I was like, this guy's nuts.
I mean, it is in perfect, like it's complete.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's mint unused. I mean, but
did
my
they
God.
Sell these 12 things individually, you think, or was this sold as a set?
I think individually.
Oh, yeah.
They're individually numbered. Like it says, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Yeah.
And he's got all 12 of them there. So I was just wondering if they sold it as a set. But if they sold them one by one, this guy went around trying to find them all. You know, that's a lot of effort for this.
He's got to pay
like
for the
old
effort.
Store stock or something. Yeah. Makes me wonder.
Yeah. This was one of those ones that when I went searching, I was like, what is this? Like, what? And it's very interesting. The one villain, I think the only villain in the entire set that's represented is Penguin.
Yeah.
Right? There's no other branded villain.
The Joker's in one of them.
One of the
later ones he's in.
Okay. But the rest of it, it's like just goons, you know, like it's guys in trench coats with, oh yeah, there I see the Joker. But like, that's it. Like just Joker and Penguin. Like we've got about a dozen DC superheroes, you know, where's Lex Luthor? Where's Mixus Pit? I don't know. It's just very strange, but yeah, what a weird ass set. So there you go. Well, anybody, if you ever want to buy me something with Aquaman in it, you can ask this guy for $759.24. Okay. Well, those are our final four pro merch segment pieces. Thank you all for participating. I really appreciate it. I think on some level I will miss going to eBay and looking up these fun items. And I will miss, Chris, you finding something to me and sending it to me and going, we have to cover this next time I'm on the show. You would manage to find some amazing stuff.
Well, maybe I just need to launch a freaking toy show after JLU cast. What do you think?
I think that sounds great. Yeah, absolutely. So, okay, now we're going to move on to our next segment, which is just a kind of a general look back at Super Friends and series. I have a couple of questions that I'm going to ask all of my ersatz panelists here. And, you know, it's just meant to kind of look back at, again, the 47 issues of Super Friends that we talked about and discuss what were some of our favorites. And there will be one that's kind of a least favorite. And then we have a bonus question, which we'll get to at the very end. So I'm going to start with you, Chris. We'll go right off the front, which is, what was your favorite issue of Super Friends?
This was really hard. I chose one that you and I covered. That's number 26. Because not only does it center around Batman, I remember getting this from the newsstand. My cousin bought it for me from the convenience store in town, and I got an IDC and all that. But we get to see a group of criminals kill Bruce Wayne on a full splash page, which we talked about, this very incredibly violent page. And Wendy and Marvin guest star, and even Marvin proves useful. I've really grown as a person through this show, guys. and I want that bracelet that Wendy gave to Jamie.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And I almost picked the next one, next issue, because that focuses on Atlantis. I don't want to steal it from anybody. But they were really on a roll in this period. This is, like, I think the best era of this comic, right through these, right through the mid-20s to the 30s, I think.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, okay, so going forward, I'm saying great answer, but I'm going to say that about virtually every answer that everybody gives, but maybe not Brett, but most of us, I'm going to say great. So I'm not going to repeat myself and say great answer. Just assume that that's what I'm saying. So, okay, Paul, what was your favorite issue?
So if I had to pick the best story, it would be the three-parter, right, 7, 8, and 9, with all the guest stars and the transition to the Wonder Twins and all that stuff. But so if I'm held to a single issue, I'm going to go with number 12, the Atomic Twosome at TNT and Dan the Dynamite, right? You got this tragic story where these guys are living alone in underground bunkers for like 30 years. And then they get out and they can't get near each other or anyone else. And one of them goes to Atlantis. The other one goes to Kandor and in suits. And we never hear about what happened to them after that. So it's a tragic issue in my mind. So I like that one.
All right, Sean.
No surprise. I'm starting off exactly like my bat cousin, Paul, the Super Friends three-parter. I just think that's fantastic. If we're keeping it to one specific issue, I'm going to go with a story right after that, the Monster Menace, where you have basically like the universal monsters as what we think are super villains, but then they turn out to be superheroes. But it's neat to see them like use their monsterness as their powers.
All right. Yeah, that was really fun. All right, Brett.
Sean, you jerk. I was mine is 10. Super Friends 10, the Monster Menace. I always thought that was cool. This kind of goes back to, this was one of the stories in the digest, in the Super Friends digest. Listen, so that was kind of my first experience with the Super Friends, was that digest. So I always had a fondness for that. And I always liked that that they fought it, and then they had the monsters, and it turned out that they were actually the heroes and the pretty girl was actually the villain. Mm-hmm. And so it was always a nice story for teaching kids not to judge people by appearance alone. And, trust me, kids, someone who looks like Cherry is going to cause you way more trouble than somebody who looks like the creature from the Black Lagoon. Too.
I agree. Girls are bad. Absolutely.
Those are all fantastic answers. I don't have necessarily an answer for every one of these sections, but I do have one for this. Paul, I kind of chose the three-parter just because it's such Justice League fun. It's so world spanning, and it's got all the, it's got the mixing of the two sets of sidekicks, and it's got all the Global Guardian showing up, and it's just, but then I also cheated. So, well, let me limit it down to one issue. And in a lot of ways, my favorite is the Warhead one with Plastic Man, because I love that it's a backdoor pilot for a Plastic Man, animated series book that we never got. And throughout the whole book, the Super Friends are just in the way. I love that E&B was willing to do that, that these are our heroes, and it's Plastic Man. It's kind of like, God, these assholes, why don't they just leave me alone? I've got this handled. I like that E&B was kind of willing to do that for his own character. So I thought that was actually pretty cool. So, okay. All right. So next up is favorite cover of the entire run of the book. So, Sean, let me start with you.
Oh, I know why you're starting with me. My absolute favorite cover is not from a Super Friends comic at all. It is from the Best of DC Digest number 3, and it is the painted cover of the Super Friends, Superman's reading, and all the Super Friends, and all of the Super Friends are sitting around listening to him read the stories.
While that is technically cheating, I did not specify that you couldn't pick it, so you got me on that one, Sean. So, okay. Paul, what about you?
Well, a close runner-up is number 8 that has Red Tornado on it with a dinosaur and the heads coming from the side, middle of that three-part story. But number 28 edges it out. Not 28. 37 with the annoyed Supergirl is the one I like. Supergirl's standing there, and she's annoyed that all the kids are paying attention to. And Supergirl looks great. And her facial expressions are fantastic. Ramona Fraiden, I think, did a great job on this cover. Sorry about that. 37, is it?
No. Brett?
Mine is Super Friends issue 25. This was, I think, the first actual physical issue I had besides the digest too. So I always liked this. I always thought it was a really dynamic cover. You know, the Overlord puppeting a battle between the heroes. You know, I always like it when the villain takes time to make dolls or puppets or chess pieces, you know, of his adversaries. I always appreciate that effort. I think that's really cool. And it kind of reminded me of, you know, like that scene from Spaceballs too, where they walk in on Dark Helmet playing with his dolls too. So it's a great story too, but I always liked that. I always thought that was a really cool cover.
All right. Chris, favorite cover?
I almost fainted when Paul said number 28, because that was my pick.
Sorry. I knew that was going to be yours, Chris, because I had it on my possibles on my little sheet here. Yep. So I said, no, I want to pick something else instead.
that is the Monster Showdown cover. That was the comic that I longed for years, because I saw that house ad with Kane and I never got the book forever. Now the cover is selling choice steak and the inside was good hamburger, but still the cover alone is worth buying and got that great tension that Ramona creates just seconds before these two teams spring at one another. So, you know, and just the skull on the balloons and the band who seems to be saying, oh shit, you know, as this rumble is about to happen. It's just a wonderful cover.
I picked that one too. Because not only is that my favorite Super Friends cover, it's one of my favorite DC Comics covers. Partly, again, through that ad that made it so enticing. But it's so brilliantly composed. And as a comic book superhero nerd, you're like, oh, my God, the demon, Man-Bat, are going to be in this episode. And then, of course, as you point out, that's not exactly what happened. So I would rate that issue, I would give it 2 tomahawks. In terms of how it does not deliver what it promises. I mean, yes, technically those characters are in the book, but they're not the real characters. So that way you don't want to ever do the full tomahawk. You don't want to go there. But it's always a little bit of a disappointment that Ian B.
Is it a Dan Hunter? Is that what you're saying?
It's a Dan Hunter? I think it's a Lord Schilling. Maybe we'll call it that. Okay. So, all right. So, Brett, let me start with you with the next question, which is favorite ENB villain, what I mean by that is the villain that's created by ENB for the book.
Right, right. I figured out what those initials meant. Thanks. So, I went with sort of a, I don't know, you guys probably won't agree with this, but I really liked World Beater. The cosmic hitman who never actually kills anybody. I just thought, again, that goes back to the digest, which was my first, you know, encounter with the Super Friends. And I just liked it. He looks like this big, giant, like Frankenstein monster with like the old school, like kind of robot looking head. And it was just fun watching him just wipe out, you know, everybody and talking shit to him. And it was just a fun story. And, you know, like I said, it's one of my early ones. At the time I thought he was kind of this really neat sort of villain. I thought he'd be around a lot. And, you know, he has one more appearance where he's taken out with X-ray vision. And of course, in the story itself, you know, he's basically made up of a bunch of murdered villains, too. So it's just,
Great choice. So, okay. Paul, favorite EMB villain?
This one was the easiest one for me. The underling who turns into the overlord, right? he's in 15. He reappears in that puppet one in 25. And then, of course, he creates Futurio. So I just think it's very clever of Nelson. We get overlord for a couple of stories at the beginning. And then this guy's behind the scenes and he becomes overlord. So I just think that's very clever. And he was just a fun villain.
All right. Great choice. Chris, favorite EMB villain?
I'm pretty sure he created him. He created Warhead, right?
Yeah. Oh, yes, he did. Yes.
Okay. That wasn't a previous Plastic Man. I didn't think so. So I wanted to make sure. But I think that guy had a ton of potential to be Plastic Man's arch enemy. And his image has been living rent-free in my Hall of Justice for 40 plus years now. So where's this guy's who's who page? Where's his... I want the, you know, the McFarlaneized action figure of him right now. No, actually, I don't want that. That would probably be scary.
Really, yeah.
But I think he had a lot of potential, not just as a Plastic Man villain, but just as a fun, you know, kind of goofy. Imagine him in the Justice League Antarctica. He would fit perfect.
Yeah.
Glad they didn't do anything with him. Yeah.
Fantastic. He fits right in that Plastic Man strip too. You could have seen Joe Staten draw that if he'd done in the strip. So I think that's a testament to ENB's ability to kind of create a, like you said, you didn't even know whether he was from the Plastic Man strip. He fits right in. Mm-hmm. So great choice. Okay, so Sean.
Well, very similar to Chris, I had to look up to make sure that ENB created this villain because I felt this was like a real old DC villain, but the Menagerie Man.
Good choice.
Menagerie Man. When I was
Menagerie Man.
Like it's cool. I love villains that stick to a theme, and his theme is like using animals in his crimes. And I love that he wasn't just a one and done villain. He showed up again. He had an outfit change. I love an outfit change.
His bare legs. I know you like that.
Oh yeah, exactly. How could I miss? Yeah.
Sean's a big fan of the thick thighs. We all know that. He is really one of the great ENB villains in terms of, and this has got to be from Ramona, like one of the great like polyglot costumes of all time. Like it's just eight random elements stitched together, a domino mask, white gloves, and then you have like a leopard print, but shorts. Like it's all just, it's like what he had left at the costume shop. He's like, this, okay, you know, like you be like smorgasbord, man.
You like the Phantom? Great. You like Tarzan? Great.
Fantastic. All right. So next up is a favorite ENB deep cut. And for those of you wondering what that means, we all know that occasionally ENB would pull a character from the depths of the DC library just to show up for a panel or two, when it could have been anybody, but no, it's somebody from an old Superman comic from 1965, because ENB was just that kind of guy. So, Paul, let me start with you. What was your favorite to pull from the DCU?
Well, I don't want to take Sean's away, but I'm going to go with Princess Evelina of Valdania from the Princess and the Vagabond story from Batman Family number 5. Extra credit.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Extra credit, because that issue was my first podcast, so I had to go with that one.
Nice.
Very nice. All right, Sean?
So I knew Paul was going to do this. So here I did kind of cheat in a way. So I knew what you meant by deep cut. I know you meant someone that originally was around before, but I'm going to twist it a little bit, because in Super Friends number 4, which is Riddles and Rockets, when they have like the fundraiser, the telethon, and they have a singer named Jeannie Gale, and she's singing the song about Wonder Woman and Superman. And then like later he brings her back and makes her one of the elementals. I don't think that he really like meant for her to become an elemental. I think he just kind of was like looking at his own back catalog and thinking, who can I pull?
Wow.
That's cheating once again, but okay. All right, we'll take it. We're all friends here. So, okay. Brett, what about you?
I went with Steve Howard, the reincarnated Steve Trevor, who's from Spy on Spy, one of the more interesting named spy networks I've ever heard of. I just thought that was cool, because when they were saying Steve Howard's like, what is this? And I had to look it up, that he had been murdered, I don't know, about 6 or 7 times. And this was one of his, you know, times that he came back, and he had dark hair, and he went by Steve Howard. So I just thought that was a good deep cut.
All right, Chris.
I will say it's going right back to the beginning, making Marvin the son of the original Diana Prince White, and making Wendy the niece of Batman's mentor, Detective Harvey Harris. That's ENB going, I have to explain why these kids are hanging out with these superheroes. I can't stand it. Who are these people? And so he did. So there you go.
You did. You know, right. You knew that kept him up at night, right? You just know that. Like, you're just like, oh my God, this has no internal consistency. This is driving me insane. Okay, well, it's it. And it is kind of amazing when you think that he created so many villains for the book when that you would think that would be his area to pull the deep cut would be villains, you know, to go through the history of DC Comics and pull out a villain that appeared once here and there. But no, like he was, again, I said this so many times on the show, he was a good company man. You know, he wanted to give the company characters they could use. But it's just so funny when you think about it, there's so many villains he could have just that made one-offs and he didn't barely, you know, he's like, no, I'm going to create the Menagerie Man. Like, oh, okay. All right. That's fine. Ian Bake. So, okay. Next up is favorite backup strip. There's only
Rob,
one answer.
Don't you have a deep cut? Rob?
No, I do not.
All right.
You know what? I learned that I have been talking for 49 straight episodes. I want to hear what you guys have to say. Okay, next up is...
I can't believe nobody said TNT and Dynamite. The only reason I didn't pay, I figured somebody else would jump on that. Nobody said...
That is a pretty deep cut, I guess, right? Hadn't really appeared much at all before since the 40s. Oh. That's true. I didn't really thought about that,
I'm a little disappointed in you guys, but okay, go on.
All right. So, okay, the next up is favorite backup strip. There's only one answer to this question. and any of you divest from this answer, you are wrong. But let's start with you, Brett. Favorite backup strip.
Okay. So I know what you want everybody to say. And I will say, I'm looking at this from when I was a kid. And I wasn't crazy about any of them, really. You know, I can retroactively say that I'm so deep that, of course, I love the Serif stories and like, oh, I was all about them. But let's face it, when I was 8 years old, I skipped right through them because I was just like, this looks lame. I don't want to read this. So if I had to pick one strip that I probably read the most of, the backups when I was a kid, you're not going to believe this, but it was probably the Wonder Twin stories. It was probably Peaches and Herb, you know, when they did stuff like when they were like solving crimes as like a hippo and the Christmas story wasn't that bad. And then they go to the disco and stuff like that. So like I said, I know everybody's going to say Sarah stories, but like I said, and I would say that now, I think they're great. I think it's wonderful that he represented you know, something very special for a lot of people. I think that's great. But as a kid, I never read the Serif stories. Come on.
All right.
Brett, I think it's okay because you're differentiating between best and favorite.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. That's what I said. I think we'd all, you know, the Serif backups, I think, are easily, especially as adults, the best, but that doesn't have to be our favorite.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's absolutely fair. So, okay, Paul, you go next.
Well, similar to Brett, the Wonder Twins, but I picked specifically the origin of the Wonder Twins from number 14 because, you know, similar to ENB, I'm like, where the heck did these guys come from? And now we know.
All right. That's good. Sean?
For me, yep. Serif technically is the best. And I know we're supposed to find our joy. I'm going to throw a little bit of a complaint. I do wish at one point each of the Global Guardians would have had a backup. I think that would have been great. Instead of like Jack-O-Lantern getting 16 of them. Now, I will say Jack-O-Lantern, I think his costume is fantastic, but yeah, those stories weren't good. However, again, I kind of almost feel bad for saying this, but technically my favorite backups were the Plastic Man backups because it was coming over from Adventure and that's where I first read Plastic Man. And I love that, like, Staten art and that I just, so technically, even though he existed before the Super Friends, technically my favorite backups are the Plastic Man ones.
Oh, I mean, that counts. It was in the back of Super Friends. Yeah, absolutely. I think much like what Paul was saying, I would say as an adult, my favorites are the Serifs because I can appreciate how special they are. But my favorite probably is Plastic Man because, again, it felt like the most Saturday morning book possible, you know, have Super Friends and Plastic Man together. So absolutely. So Chris, what about you?
You know, of course, Serif for the best, as you guys said, there's no contest, but you know, I enjoyed the Wonder Twins. I enjoyed Plastic Man. The Global Guardians backups, you know, which was Serif and Jack-O-Lantern at the time, I didn't care for them that much. I think even as a kid, I thought the artwork in the Serif was, I liked it. You know, I had good taste, but The one Super Friends number 14 that introduced the Elementals that was brought up earlier, they had their own backup in that issue with the Wonder Twins. And I really liked that one. And I bought into the fact that, oh, these guys must be a big deal at DC Comics, you know? So, of course, I was like four. But, you know, but I really thought they had potential, you know, to like go on from this. And, of course, they never appeared again, even in Super Friends, I don't think. So maybe they did. I can't remember, but I don't think they did. So,
no, I don't think so either. Yeah,
I liked it. I liked that one.
All right. I think I'm really happy. Again, we're trying to stay positive, but I'm relieved that none of you picked Jack-O-Lantern. In terms of the gulf between visual concept and final execution, those are like, he gets like 10 tomahawks. I mean, it's just, it's Jack-O-Lantern is so cool and has such great powers. And every time those stories were god awful. I mean, just so bad. I was like, so that is always just so, so very, very frustrating is that I love the look. I love his little Halloween bucket, you know, accessory that he had, all that stuff. But then he's just dealing with elves and just, oh my God, you're killing me. There are leprechauns. So, all right. Yeah. Okay. So, well, that leads perfectly into the next question, which is favorite global guardian. And again, it doesn't have to be Seraph, of course, because he had kind of a leg up getting all those backups, but you mean which, you know, just like your favorite out of the big group that we saw appear a bunch of times. So Paul, start with you.
Well, it's hard not to pick Green Fury, knowing her future. She actually has a future. Or Seraph, who, you know, had the great stories, but I'm going to go with Dr. Mist. He's got this tragic story of being immortal and he's so lonely. You know, he's not originally a member, but I'm counting him anyway, because he was a member later. And who can resist a guy who carves a giant statue of his head into a mountain?
Would have made for an amazing playset, right? Yeah. It would have been absolutely amazing.
Dr. Mist's Mountain.
Castle Grayskull, but with a big giant head. It would have been so cool. So, Brett, favorite Global Guardian?
Good luck on the resale value on that, too.
$600 on eBay.
All right. So, mine is Impala, who is in Super Friends 7. So I ran track and field in high school and college. So I always liked characters with, like, you know, runners or like with a track and field background. So, you know, you kind of combine that with he had like the powers of an antelope and everything. And I'm in, you know, he could jump real fast. He could jump real high because, you know, I know they're sort of around these guys who can like move mountains or fire lasers and everything. But like when I was running, like when I was in college, there was a guy on my team who was from the Bahamas, this guy named Kent Lightborn. And I always thought I was pretty fast and everything, you know, I was really good. And I remember standing on the side of the track when he was doing the 400 meters. And he came around and he was on the outside lane and he came by me and it was like a train went by. And I was like, that is speed. So when you have a guy who just, he doesn't, you know, he's not the Flash or anything like that, but he has like sort of this overpowered ability to run and jump and everything. I always just think those are really cool powers, you know, at that level. So I thought Impala was pretty cool.
That's fit. Did you say his name was Kent Lightborn?
Kent Lightborn. Yes.
What? That is a superhero name if I ever heard one.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, he ran like one too. He was a really good dude too.
Wow, that is.
He must have been from New Genesis or something.
Yes. Yeah. I can see the Who's Who listing drawn by Jack Kirby right now.
There's no chance he's listening to this probably, but hi, Kent. Hope you're doing well.
Wow, that is super cool. Okay, so, all right, Chris, favorite Global Guardian?
Well, of course, you know, Sarah probably should be it, but I'm going to go with Bushmaster. I love his goofy helmet. Ramona liked the look so much, she basically cribbed it again for that elemental salamander lady from issue 14, which I brought up. And I like the fact that he had, you know, he had the weird little sticky fingers and all that. I mean, I liked the blue and the orange. I didn't like when he appeared in the DC universe, they toned the helmet down. And I, you know, he's got a unique look. He probably sounds like Paul Hicks. So that's cool. You know, so
is it,
what's not to love? You know, I just think I like his look. He's kind of like the Australian Batman, even though there was an Australian Batman in the Club of Heroes. But, you know, besides all that, he was still really cool.
Great pick. The Bushmaster. That was your nickname in high school, right, Sean?
Oh.
My favorite hero is Thunderlord, and you might not even know who Thunderlord is. He was the hero that teamed up with Black Canary in issue 8. Like, first of all, I am on a mission to find bald superhero men, because like there's Watu the Watcher, Professor X, and Thunderlord. So I need cosplay identities. Also, like, he has like these super long like sleeves, which like I just think look fantastic, and like his shirt is literally like cut down to his belt. Like he looks fantastic.
Very 70s. Yeah, that's all a great costume. Yeah, right, exactly. That's fantastic look. So, okay, as I mentioned, we're always trying to stay positive here, but I couldn't resist. What is everybody's least favorite Global Guardian? So, Chris, I'll start with you.
It was hard. I don't really dislike any of them. I think they all have potential, but it's probably Tuatara because he has that weird third eye thing. And when they showed him unmasked later, when he had that third eye, and after I watched Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, nobody can make that look good. So I'm just like, oh, so yeah, that's not him.
All right, fair enough. Sean.
So there aren't any Global Guardians that I don't like. So this is kind of like not personal to me, but this is my hang up. I really get the Wild Huntsman and the Olympian mixed up in my mind. I guess because there's like a lot of like fur and hair, although they both have bare legs, so that's fantastic. But they kind of like they just seem so like furry and hairy, and they both have horns like on their heads, so like it's too similar, I think. Now, I don't say I don't like them. It's just too confusing to me.
Yeah, no, this is not anything. Oh, I mean, most of the characters you never really got to know at any great level to really even dislike. But I always, the reason I even put this in here is that it was just some of their designs were just kind of so goofy that you were like, what, really? Like this guy? So, okay, Brett, least favorite Global Guardian?
Little Mermaid. It has to be Little Mermaid. It's terrible costume design, lame powers. Why is she flying when she has a fish tail? You know, I just thought it was, you know, the weird glasses and everything. I just not a fan. And she got what was coming to her anyway, I think, in the
Wow.
God.
Oh, that guy, jeez, I ain't really holding a grudge.
Oh,
there.
It's a character. It's not a real person. Come on.
Wow. All right, Paul, follow that.
Well, there you go. I'm going to make an enemy out of Chris because I put Bushmaster on this one. I just thought he looked stupid. I mean, his costume, I don't really have anything against him. I struggled with this one. I was just looking at their looks, and I just thought his especially the helmet, I just think it's kind of silly. So that's the only thing I had.
I always liked Bushmaster, but I couldn't stand the suction cup feet.
Yeah.
That always was like, how does he run with those things? You know?
It would make a great toy.
Yeah, that's true. You could throw against the wall and watch him kind of crawl down like a creepy crawler. That wouldn't be the worst thing. So, okay. Again, I thank you all except for Brett. None of you got really mean about it. So that was good. So, okay. We're getting near the end here. Brett, let me start with you. What DCU character would you have liked to have seen as a guest star in Super Friends that we never got?
All right, so I went with this a little bit, so bear with me. I had actually a team in mind as opposed to like a individual character, and I actually kind of had three teams. So the number one I would love to have seen is Justice Society.
Oh, that's mine too. That's mine too.
And then particularly I had Dr. Fate, Green Lantern, Flash, Dr. Midnight, Huntress, and Power Girl. I thought that would have been a cool thing.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I also would have liked to have seen the Legion of Superheroes. Mm-hmm. I thought that would be pretty cool.
Since they had Time Trapper, right?
Yeah, since they had Time Trapper, you know, the originals like Cosboy, Saturn Girl, Lightning Lad, and then maybe like Phantom Girl. I would love to see Ramona Fraiden draw Ultra Boy and Phantom Girl. I just think she'd do an awesome job with them for some reason. I just think that would be a really cool design for her. And yeah, so those were kind of the two teams. I thought it would be really neat to see Ramona Freyden in particularly draw.
Can you imagine trying to fit the Legion of Superheroes in with the Super Friends in a 17-page story? Like, what hell? How dense well, that would have gotten?
It would have to be a limited group, you know?
You know? I mean, that's made, yeah. Well, like I said, of course, those are fantastic answers. Sean?
I also, like, everyone says 7, 8, and 9 are like a team up with Justice League and Justice Society. I also had Justice Society. I felt an obligation to say Deadman because I love Deadman.
Good answer. Of course, Paul.
I had basically Earth 2 / Justice Society. I was thinking maybe an Earth 2 version of the Super Friends.
Ooh.
But instead of fun. Like Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, they had like the Earth 2 Green Lantern and Flash, maybe an Earth 2 version of Wonder Twins and Power Girl Huntress, you know, that kind of stuff. So like some version of the Justice Society with an Earth 2 version of the Super Friends.
Great. Oh, I love that. That's a great idea. Chris?
Well, I had the JSA, but luckily I had a backup. But I thought for sure that Sean and Paul would pick Batgirl. But they didn't.
I thought about it.
Yeah, a fake Batgirl did appear in issue number 21.
It wasn't really her, though, right? It was the.
No, it wasn't. It was an Exorian.
Yeah. Actually, that was my backup as well, but go ahead.
Okay, yeah. And I've always been haunted by the fact that Batgirl appeared on a Super Friends beanbag I had, a beanbag.
Yeah.
So, but she was never on the show. So, but Alex Toth did design her for a series of Underoos ads, though. So there is a Batgirl design out there by Alex Toth that could have been on the Super Friends. So there you go.
And she was in the Letra set things that we just saw, too. So, yeah.
Yep.
No. They're all obviously fantastic answers, especially when you think about they'd be drawn by Ramona Freyden, which would be amazing. So, okay, so our last kind of proper question, Paul, I'll start with you. What DCU villain would you have liked to have seen take on the Super Friends?
So, going along with the Super Friends theme, I would have picked our favorite two Bat Family frenemies, Killer Moth and the Cavalier.
Oh, yeah.
That's starring, Batgirl.
Oh,
that's where I would have brought Batgirl in to help the Super Friends with Killer Moth and the Cavalier.
All right, fantastic. Chris?
I picked Lex Luthor because with Superman the movie and Challenge of the Super Friends both happening in 1978, you think E&B would have worked an appearance of Lex in at some point. But as far as I can recall, he never appears. So that's like true. A big oversight in my opinion.
Yeah, that's true. I never thought about it. It would have been great if it was the Challenge version too, that super pissed off Luthor.
Yeah.
Who's just constantly wanting to murder the Super Friends. We will kill them once and for all. Oh my God, Lex, settle down, man. So, okay. Brett, what about you?
Well, Dr. Light, of course, would be my favorite. I thought the Crime Syndicate would kind of be cool, see them battle their opposites, and they have to mix it up a little bit because I guess Aquaman and Robin don't have a version, I don't think.
No.
So they could, you know, create a couple for that. The other guy I was thinking of to go along with the JSA team up would have been like Perdegaton. I figure that would be a fun time travel story. So you could use the JSA from when they were younger to, you know, World War II epic type thing. That way you could kind of have a dictator without having to, you know, drag Nazis into the whole thing or something like that, too. So.
Okay. Very cool. Sean?
I love my villains with a theme, and there's probably no more themier villain than Two-Face. I would have loved to have seen Two-Face.
Yeah. Oh, again, any of those drawn by Ramona Freyden. So I actually had an answer for this one. Star of the Conqueror. Really would have loved Ramona to draw Star of the Conqueror. I think that would have fit right in with her style. And who doesn't want to watch the Super Friends fight a giant starfish? You know, I just like, oh man, that would have been so cool. So that's
could have took him out with a bag of lime too.
Yeah, like, exactly. Exactly. I'm telling you, Starro would not be defeated by Gleek, like that little time trapper bitch. You know, I mean, he would have been an actual decent villain. True. So, okay. Well, those are all of our questions, except for one last that I threw in for extra credit. And so I don't expect all of you to have an answer for this one because it was fairly complex. And I know you all have internal lives and you have better things to worry about than this. So
not really.
Okay. All right. So which ones of you, before I get into the question, just tell me on the air, which ones of you have an answer for this?
I do.
Okay. So Paul and Brett have answers for this question. Okay.
I do too, Chris.
Though. Oh, you do? You do as well. Okay. All right. So, all right. Well, Chris, I'll start with you then. So this extra credit question is, of course, we know now that ENB's ersatz 3 question mark harder featuring Futurio never got solved because the book got canceled before he ever got around to it. He was spacing them out across various issues, and I guess he figured he was going to get to it eventually, but he never did because the book got canceled, I think probably relatively, and maybe in EMB's mind, prematurely. And that's a giant cliffhanger for all of us to have to kind of imagine. So in a couple of paragraphs or less, and show your work, how would you have wrapped up the Futurio three-parter? So Chris, go ahead.
Well, I would reveal that Futurio was actually the evolved Tio Mauro from the Red Tornado strip in World's Finest that was running around the same time because they looked almost exactly alike, and it confused me as a kid, right down to the pencil-thin mustache and their testicle giant brain head. So they're the same guy, so why not just let them be the same guy? So there you go.
He does have a very Metaluna mutant look to him, no doubt about that. So, all right, Paul?
So I would have had a three-part epic spanning issues 48, 49, and a double-sized 50 final issue.
Oh, wow.
So what happens is Futurio B, I'm going to call him, because he's from 1 billion. The first one was 100,000, the next one was 1 million, and this guy was from 1 billion years in the future. I think he's so evolved, because the first guys were evolved, they had a bigger head. So this guy comes out, he's mostly just a big head, like MODOK-like looking, right? And he considers, instead of, you know, Overlord keeps thinking that he can get these guys to obey him, he considers Overlord to be so beneath him that he barely notices him. So the first issue is about him viewing problems all around the world. And he decides that humans have messed up the world enough, so he's going to replace them all with his evolved species. But he tells Overlord if he can prove that humans are worth saving, then he'll leave and go to another planet. So the Overlord has to go to the Super Friends for help. So then you get all the Super Friends, the Justice League, the Global Guardians, all the other heroes from around the world are needed to do this. They split up into a bunch of teams, of course. Each team has to do good deeds. And along the way, they teach kids around the world how to be better people. And this shames their parents into being better people. So Futurio B is impressed. He leaves, goes to his other planet, and Overlord goes to jail. The end.
Wow.
That's really good, Paul. That's really great.
That is impressive. That, Nelson, that would have been a satisfying wrap up to the book, right? If they had canceled Super Friends with number 50.
It goes back to the first season of the Super Friends cartoon, too. I like that. It's the moral. Yes.
It's got a moral to it.
Yep. It's got the moral to it. Yeah. I can hear Ted Knight narrating it right now. So, oh my God. Both phenomenal ideas. Okay, Brett, bring us home.
Okay, so you're going to have to bear with me a little bit here, guys. it's the Wayne Foundation's Christmas Eve party. Bruce Wayne's invited guests include the Super Friends, Shields and Yarnell, Wendy, Marvin, and Wonder Dog, Ashford and Simpson, the Global Guardians, Peters and Lee, Green Fury, Peaches and Herb, Commissioner Gordon, Donnie and Marie, Helmet the Lizard, Captain and Tennille, Jack in the Box, and Vince Coletta.
Women?
I don't know how he got an invite either. Aquaman's wife, Mara, has left Atlantis to climb the corporate ladder at Wayne Enterprises, which has caused a rift in their marriage. To commemorate Mara making executive VP, Bruce Wayne got her a swatch because it's the 80s. Aquaman arrives to the party late, and not feeling very festive, after a short argument with Mara, Aquaman heads to the Wayne penthouse moat for a smoke and a swim. Meanwhile, the party is interrupted with gunfire as the waiters and chefs reveal themselves to all be clones of the Overlord. Looking for a quick change, Bruce Wayne slips his ascot and smoking jacket onto Helmet the Lizard and changes into Batman. But it's to no avail, as he and the other Super Friends are quickly frozen in time by a time stop array being held by none other than Futurio XXX. The heroes are stunned to see the third generation villain and his huge throbbing veiny cranium. Once all the guests are incapacitated, Futuria looks for billionaire Bruce Wayne. Mistaking Helmet the Lizard for Bruce because he's wearing his ascot and smoking jacket, Futuria interrogates the puppet to get the Wayne Foundation safe combinations. It turns out in the future, Futuria took a bath in some real estate investments. Aquaman hears the disturbance and sneaks down from the penthouse to see all the other super friends, Global Guardians, and even Womack and Womack frozen in time. He uses his Justice League radio to alert the rest of the League and the satellite, but they're all too wasted on Green Arrow's eggnog to respond. Aquaman then follows Futuria's voice into the boardroom, where a smartly dressed Helmet the Lizard is refusing to give up the Wayne Foundation safe combinations because A, he's not actually Bruce Wayne, and B, he's a puppet. A frustrated Futuria counts to three and then executes Helmet the Lizard as stuffing flies everywhere. Hiding nearby, Aquaman is shocked by the murder, but even more so by the massive, bulbous, veiny head of Futuria. By Neptune's testes, look at that head. Somebody drop a fig leaf over it. Uh-oh, he heard me. I got to get out of here or I'll end up dead like green Bruce Wayne over there. Poor bastard. He got cooked right through his ascot. Okay, looks like the floor is empty. I'll hide here. Oh no, another clone with a machine gun. I'll have to fight. Ugh, he fell and impaled himself on a tree limb. Why are there so many random tree branches poking into a workplace? Okay, I'm going to show Captain Balls I mean business and write something cool on this guy's corpse. Ah, shit, I misspelled it. Moments later, on the party floor, the elevator opens as Futuria sees one of his clones dead with a note written on his shirt. Now I've got a machine head. Then a smaller note reading, I meant machine gun, LOL. Find him, shouts an enraged Futuria. After several action-packed hours of explosions and punching and other Christmas stuff, the battle culminates atop Wayne Foundation building in Bruce Wayne's penthouse. A bruised and bloodied Aquaman drowns another henchman in his famous choke technique. Okay, I've killed about 30 of these clones in various badass ways. That's probably a big no-no for a super friend, but honestly, a bunch of these guys just died falling off the penthouse roof because there's no safety rail. So I'll cut myself some slack. Oh no, Futuria is here and he has Mira by the wrist with a laser gun pointed at her head. Got to come up with a plan. Concentrate and not get distracted by that pulsing, wrinkly, veiny dome. By Triton, all that's missing is a few stray hairs and it would be a public indecency. I mean, does it sag below his shoulders when the weather's humid? I bet he's sensitive about it. Wait, that's it. I have an idea. Aquaman rises from the penthouse moat with his hands behind his head. I'm here, Futuria. Let Mera go. Well, 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 says Futuria as he slowly points the gun at Aquaman. We finally meet. Did you really think you could outsmart my superior intellect? Aquaman smiles. If you were really that smart, you would have worn a cup. Suddenly, Aquaman tosses a small goldfish from behind his back and clips Futuria in his scrotum head. The glancing blow causes delayed, massive pain. Futuria backpedals in agony through the hedges and off the side of the ledge, still holding on to Mira's wrist. Fortunately, Mira knows that the cool 80s way to wear a swatch is for the face to be on the inside wrist, so Aquaman easily helps her unhook the watch band as a shocked Futuria falls from the Wayne penthouse to his death below with a super gross squish noise. Looks like you teabagged the pavement, Futuria, Aquaman shouts. Oh man, he's already dead. That was a good one. Wish he had heard that. Aquaman and Mera embrace. I love you, Arthur, and I see now how silly it was to have my own professional ambitions and goals. Plus, all this death and destruction has me oddly aroused. Me too, Mera. All that killing made me feel like a real man. My weed guy is waiting out front in his Ford Tempo. Let's go home. The end.
I said three paragraphs or less, Brad. I don't know whether you can't follow basic instructions. They
were long paragraphs.
Wow. Well, three very divergent ideas.
All kind of similar.
All of them workable in their own ways. I would have liked to have seen Ramona Freyden draw that whole thing. That would have been really fascinating. So, well, wow. What might have been, guys, right? What might have been?
I would like to have seen the Wonder Twins meet Donnie and Marie and get confused, you know, like, you know, Zan tries to, you know, Wonder Twin power with Marie and it doesn't work or something, you know. So.
And wait, so, I mean, Brett, would there have been endless sequels of this story set in different, like, you know, in an airport and then, you
yeah,
know,
absolutely,
like, I don't
know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And then yeah, one in New York City.
I think they'd have to. Yeah. Like Aquaman and his wee guy get like stopped at Dulles Airport, you know, and then, and then all of a sudden, you know, action breaks out, stuff like that. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, maybe someday, you know, we have enough Patreon supporters. We'll commission some artist. We can get Ramona out of retirement and draw this 78-page spectacular that you just crafted. So,
well, I cut it short. I, you know, I kind of yada at half the action. I could have told you how Aquaman killed every single guy, but I wanted to keep it moving.
I appreciate that. Well, gentlemen, thank you all for those. They're all incredibly imaginative in their own diverse ways. And so that's it. We've reached the end of episode of For All Mankind. I will be coming back in a moment to do some listener feedback for the last time, but this is the final segment with some guests. And so, guys, thank you all for doing this. I really deeply appreciate you being on the show and appreciate all the support you've shown the show over the years, both in your appearances on the show and in Brett in your insane ramblings, comments that you've left on the webpage. So, guys, again, thank you all for being here. I really very much appreciate it.
No, well, thank you, Rob. And this show will always be special in my heart, just given that where you gave me my big shot to become a podcaster. And now look what's happened. So
your wife has me to thank for that. So.
No, but thank you. This has been a great show, and I'm just happy that I was able to be a little part of it.
Thank you very much, Paul. So again, guys, again, thank you all. I really do appreciate it.
You did great as sort of the outsider here, you know, the one that's sort of been listening from afar for most of this. I know a lot of you guys had a lot of appearances on here, and I've enjoyed every single one, and it was a terrific show, and it was a great kind of look back into a time of my youth, and it was a terrific show. Rob, you did a great job with it. You should be really proud, and it's definitely one of those evergreen shows, one you can keep kind of going back to and listening to again and again. It's a great show.
Thank you again. Yeah, guys, thank you.
I have to have a few words.
I'm not soliciting compliments, everybody, by the way. I really am not.
Everybody doesn't know is at the end of the notes, Rob says, now you guys all say something nice about me.
Right. Hey, tribute.
Yeah. Now, I think, you know, I've really enjoyed listening to this show. I've greatly enjoyed being a part of it. But what I really love about it is that, of course, we always try to find our joy and be positive. But with this show, I think you've really helped a lot of people. There's quite a few people I know that listened to this show that had never read this book before, you know, that discovered this comic. They might have had an issue or two here, but you really, you know, you really shined a light on a really great Bronze Age comic that I think, you know, it gets kind of forgotten in some ways. I mean, the artwork's great. The stories are very creative, and the way that it pulls from DC history is a lot of fun and kind of ahead of its time in some ways with that. And I think you did a fantastic job showing that, yeah, there's some great stuff hiding in those long boxes. So go out and dig them out, or, you know, go to DC Universe Infinite, go to InStock Trades and buy the book. And I think you turned a lot of people onto this comic, and it deserves it. It was a great, fun comic that meant a lot to a lot of us that were around the right age to buy it. But then you opened it up to so many people who had never read it before. And now they're like, oh yeah, if they see that, they're going to be like, oh yeah, I remember when they talked about this. So, I mean, that's a great thing that podcasts can do. They kind of extend the shelf life of these comics, and it kind of carries forward.
Well, thank you very much. So, all right, Sean.
My two favorite comic book series are Batman Family and Super Friends. And thanks to you, I got to be involved with both of them. And I really, really appreciate that. And I love hearing all of your episodes with For All Mankind.
Again, thank you all, gentlemen. I really appreciate it. I could not imagine any other way to end the show other than with a bunch of guests. Because again, the show is about super friends. And that's the reason why I introduced every single guest as a super friend, even Chag. I don't know, because I meant it. And so, like I said, there was I never had any other way of ending this other than with a bunch of my guests. And so I really do appreciate it. So thank you all for doing this. It really means a lot to me. And thank you all for listening. I want you to stay tuned. I'm going to run some commercial announcements. And when I come back, the final listener feedback.
Last year, the Tonka Toy Company ran a commercial to parents about broken toys. In it, children told their parents how their toys got broken. One said, an elephant stepped on it. We wondered what would happen if an elephant stepped on a Tonka toy. A toy shouldn't break just because a child plays with it.
From Kenner's Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back collection, it's Tauntaun.
My mission is urgent.
Tauntaun has removable reins and saddle. Action figures each sold separately.
Hey, old rebel soldier!
Han Solo, help! Luke Skywalker's in danger!
Tauntaun's front and hind legs move.
Luke's okay!
I found him!
Our mission's complete.
Tauntaun from Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back collection. Action figures each sold separately. From Kenner.
Meet Super Friends. Superman, Wonder Woman, Aquaman, Batman, together for the first time with three new friends, Wendy, Marvin, and Wonder Dog, Super Friends.
And it's time for the final listener feedback section. And these are the comments we got on the previous episode of For All Mankind, episode 49, with my guests Paul Kinn and Sean M. Myers, who, of course, you just heard a second ago. First up, Edo Boznar says, Happy New Year to Rob, Paul, and Sean, and everyone else on the network. I like that you revisited the Super Friends Treasury and Digest, but I don't really have much to say about those that I didn't say about those books when they were covered on Treasury Cast and Digest Cast, respectively. You did, however, remind me how much I miss getting digest casts on a more regular schedule. So this rerun really hit the spot. And I like Wonder Dog, too. Thank you, Edo. And yes, I apologize for the lack of digest casts. Other members of the network could pick up that particular ball and run with it. I've just just gotten bogged down by all the synopses you have to write for those digests. So that's why those, at least on my side of the ledger, digest casts are so few and far between. Bucky 749 says, Happy New Year. I like Marvin, Wendy, and Wonder Dog as well, but I like dogs. Me too. I didn't know that Marvin had a superpower and is part of the Wonder Woman, though a family, though an honorary member. Maybe Marvin and Wonder Dog should be brought back as full members of Wonder Woman's family in modern times. A goofy nephew and his lovable dog that helped Diana solve mysteries from time to time, maybe. Done in Saturday morning style, we could have Wonder Woman family mystery comic for kids. What do you think? They could bring Wonder Toddler back as well as Marvin's little sister with super strength who looks up to a superhero aunt. Yeah, I mean, you know, there should be a Wonder Woman cartoon on the regular. I know Saturday morning cartoons are not a thing anymore, sadly, but I just think Wonder Woman as a pop culture icon should just be in a cartoon every week in some form. So, you know, there's Harley Quinn has her own cartoon, for Pete's sakes. Superman had like a miniseries not that long ago. Wonder Woman should be out there more. So, you know, that idea is as good as any, Bucky. Super Captain says, thank you and happy new year to all the good folks at Fire and Water. I don't have much to add, except that I also love the Digest cover, including everyone, including Wonder Dog and Gleek. Monkeys are my favorite characters, but I like Wonder Dog too. The poor pooch was the victim of one of the worst updates in the history of comics when Sean McKeever decided to introduce Marvin, Wendy, and Wonder Dog into Teen Titans in the 2000s. Wonder Dog ends up being a disguised hellhound who actually eats Marvin and Wendy. What a difference 30 years or so makes, I guess. My inner six-year-old was traumatized. Looking forward to episode 50. I did not know that, Super Captain, and I didn't need to know that. So thank you, I guess. Dan D says, wow, I don't think there's anything about the DC Bronze Age that you guys don't know. I'm a little older than you guys by about 5 years or so. So I went from late Silver Age DC and Marvel, and then went directly to Bronze Age Marvel. So I never knew any of this stuff. Been getting back into comics heavily. I'm trying to read as many of the campy and bizarre 65 to 75 DCs as possible. And I was a couple of years too old to keep following cartoons, so I've never seen a Super Friends show, so this is all very interesting to me. Another amazing podcast. By the way, in this endeavor, I've become familiar with Mike Sekaski. He's DC's version of Marvel's Frank Robbins, who I didn't like growing up, but I have really started to like both of them recently. Not sure why my opinion is shifting. It's either their incredibly distinctive and visually exciting styles or my diminishing eyesight. Happy New Year. Yeah, Dan, that's a terrific comparison. I think stylistically, those two are very similar. And yeah, like you, although I liked Sekaski more. I didn't like Frank Robbins straight up when I was a kid. I thought those books, those Invaders books and some of those Batmans were, and the Shadow were ugly. And then I've grown to just love them. So yeah, I don't know what it is. It's just our tastes change over time. But yeah, they have similar styles. So you could, it's a great comparison. Michael Best says, regarding the Digest painted cover, indeed, it was Joy Landa who painted the colors over top Garcia Lopez and Smith's art. Moreover, wonderful podcast. Great way to start off my new year. Well, thank you for the info, Michael. Chris Franklin, of course, again, from this very network and this very episode, says, great discussion, gents. I didn't have either the Treasury or the Digest as a kid, but the existence of both haunted me from the house ads. I got the Treasury decades ago at my first regular comic shop. I wrote an article on it for Back Issue magazine in that great Treasury-sized issue. Cindy gifted me the Alex Toth Genius Animated book for Christmas, so I've been drooling all over his work for Hanna-Barbera and other studios, including Super Friends, of course. The animation course in the back of the book is indeed pure Toth, not only in execution, but in concept. I wonder if he refused to do the wraparound segments, and if they didn't let him do this, I wouldn't be a bit surprised. The Digest I own, thanks to the generous gift of Mr. Rob Kelly, who sent it to me years ago. It's funny, I have no memory of that. The cover is beautiful and sweet, and all those wonderful things Sean mentioned. Seems like the original three-part Global Guardian story would have been a great selection for this issue, essentially creating a mini-trade paperback. Plus, it had Wendy, Marvin, Wonder Dog, and the Wonder Twins. And just for the record, I have no problems at all with Wonder Dog and Wendy, just Marvin. Thank you for the clarification, Chris, and great getting it in just under the wire here. Chuck Coletta says, just a quick little aside, fans of the Super Friends and Silver Age DC Comics may want to check out the recent animated Scooby-Doo and Crypto 2 movie, as it's full of nice references to the comics of the era, plus a couple of references to the 1978 Superman, Zod, Ursa, and Non make appearances. Do you hear that, Chris? We may have to cover that on Superman Movie Minute. And then finally, Brett Young, of course, again from this very episode, says, great show, Rob and Beth Cousins. The Digest was my first experience with the Super Friends comic, and those three stories live in my child brain. I'll skip the Aquaman inner monologue this time, as I think he'll have his moment coming up. So instead, let me say thank you for a terrific podcast. For All Mankind is always a must listen, and I look forward to it every month. I'm especially looking forward to episode 50. As I understand, you've got three past guests, plus a brilliant commenter with the voice of an angel. Thanks for a fun ride. Thank you, Brett. I don't think I have the voice of an angel, but I appreciate you saying it. Yeah, as you mentioned at the top of the show, you're not going to get to make any more appearances on this show, but I think what you lack in quantity, you made up for in quality. So that is going to do it for the listener feedback session. Thank you all so much for leaving comments. I really, really appreciate it. So yeah, we're wrapping up here. Of course, you can find all the back episodes of For All Mankind in perpetuity on our website, findwaterpodcast.com. You can still find us over on Twitter at For All Mankind SF. You can subscribe to the show. Again, I don't know why you would do that, on any podcatcher of your choice. And a big one final salute to my Patreon supporters over at patreon.com/FW podcast. Chuck Dill, Stanford M. Brown, Donald McWaters, plus Gord Tolton and Davies Gutierrez for their support of the show. I really do appreciate it. And I know that just last month I did a thanks to all the guests from 2023. But I'm going to do another list where I'm going to thank everybody that was on this show, because the guests are what made it special. There's a reason why I introduced everybody across every episode as my super friend, because I thought of them that way, even for people I'd never recorded with before or have never met. There was something about the Super Friends comic to me that brings out a kind of a geniality. I think that's what ENB intended too. And so every one of these conversations was just enormous fun, and it would not be the show that it ended up becoming without these guests. So big thanks to Sean M. Myers, Michael Bailey, Chris from Professor Frenzy, David Gallagher, Russell Burbage, Chris Franklin, the Irredeemable Shag, John Wilson, Paul Kien, Terry O'Malley, Mark Russell, Sean Ross, Laurel Phillips, Derek Liam Crabb, Cindy Franklin, Martin Gray, Jared Albrecht, Billy D., J. Jones Goldstein, Tim Price, Dr. Jennifer Schwartz-Levine, Scott X., Ryan Daly, Dr. Ange, Shally Fish, Delvin Williams, Henry Bernstein, Steve Givens, Max Romero, Captain Entropy, Devin Clancy, Dr. Chris Lewis, Ziskoid, Boss, Mike Staley, Brian Heiler, Chuck Dill, Noah Tarnow, Gabriel Hardman, and of course, Brett Young. So again, thank you all. You just made this show so fun to do, and I really, really appreciate it. So I guess that's it, everybody. Again, I thank you all for listening, for giving this old comic book some attention. You know, it was one of my favorite books growing up, and while I missed a couple over the course of its run, I basically, you know, for the most part, collected it from beginning to end, and there aren't that many books I can say that about. And it was always a special thing to me. And, you know, it's always wonder, will anyone care about talking about a comic book that's 50 years old at this point? And anyone who records a podcast, I mean, most of the names of the list I just read there are do their own podcasts. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of effort. It's a lot of scheduling. And you do it because you want to do it, and you do it because you think it'll be fun and the conversations will be fun. But you also do hope that somebody listens to it. And I've always been deeply appreciative of the audience that For All Mankind had from the very beginning, and a very engaged, interactive audience. I mean, this show had a lot of comments on any given episode, much more than some of my other shows that have way more listeners. So I always really appreciated that. And, you know, it was just great to have a chance to appreciate the work of E. Nelson Bridwell, Barbara Zakas, Denny O'Neill, again, who wrote a couple of fill-ins, plus Bob Oxner, who wrote some of the backups, not to mention the great Ramona Fraiden, who we just mentioned, just retired at age 97, just one of the most amazing careers in all of comics. You know, as a former slash fellow artist myself, I really like the chance to appreciate and highlight some great work that maybe has gone unappreciated or just has been forgotten through the mists of time. So it was just an absolute delight to be able to talk about the book and, you know, poke fun of it here and there and discuss its shortcomings here and there, you know, see Jack O'Lantern. But overall, the Super Friends comic, I thought, was just an absolute blast. And so was this show, giving everybody, me and everyone else, a chance to discuss it. So, yeah, it was just a total thrill. And, you know, people have mentioned there's ways to extend the show. There are other related material that we could have covered, you know, the early 2000 Super Friends series written by Sally Fish, who I was lucky enough to have on the show. There was the Superpowers miniseries and things like that. And that's all stuff that we could have covered. But I really, when I set out to start the show, I always knew it had an end point. And one of my favorite shows that we've ever done on this network, and I had nothing to do with it, so I can say it, is Ryan Daly's Secret Origins. And he put a finite point on it, even though everyone wanted him to continue because it was such a great show, but he wanted it to be a kind of finished piece. And there's a kind of grace in that, of just saying, you know what, all good things and all that. And so even though there's other material we could cover, I feel like maybe that's for another day or for another show, but for this show, I always intended to end it at this moment. And I'm glad I'm gonna sort of ending it on my own terms, I guess is a way to put it. So again, thank you all for listening. Thanks so much to Chris Franklin and Paul Ken and John Myers and Brett Young for coming on and doing this final episode with me. That was just a total blast to record. And that's going to do it. So as you head out, everybody, I think we should all take a page from the Super Friends themselves and in our own ways, continue the fight for truth, justice, and peace for all mankind.
An FWTV podcast.